Okay, let's move on with the agenda. The next item we have is climate change. And before we delve into this particular part of the agenda, I just wanted to make a few comments to underscore the importance of our agenda item on climate change. Firstly, I think it's worthwhile everyone being aware that earlier this year, the United Nations Economic Forum each year produces a list of what they consider to be the top 10 global risks over the next 10 years. And for the first time, we have seen a very high prevalence of environmental related risks in their top 10 list. And their first three in severity order are climate inaction, followed by extreme weather, followed by diversity loss. And I'd ask people to keep those three in mind as we move through our agenda item. The other thing is that in recent months, there's been multiple studies and reports by the leading global consulting companies. And these companies have established climate management teams within their organization. And each one of these studies is revealing and expressing concern as to whether or not the climate commitments that have been made by countries, some, and that totals some 70 plus companies as of December 21, will actually be enough to achieve the goal of limiting temperature increases to well below 2 degrees Celsius, which was the target from the 2015 Paris Agreement, which baselines a lot of the climate change initiatives going on. In addition, one of those studies that were undertaken by a global management company indicated that failing to take sufficient action could result within the US alone economics of $14.5 trillion in present value terms over the next 50 years. And what that means is that every working person in the US would actually see a lifetime income loss of nearly $70,000. Likewise, that same study indicated that if there was to be rapid decarbonisation and the leveraging of new low carbon technologies, much of that loss could be offset, and there could actually be an injection into the economy of some $885 billion annually. And that doesn't all happen in the Columbia River Gorge. The next thing is that if we look back over climate-related impacts, the impact of climate events in 2021 in the US totaled more than $145 billion, and it claimed some 650 lives. They're important numbers to keep in the back of your mind. Last month, we also saw the International Panel for Climate Change releasing its sixth assessment report. And I have copies of that report, which I'll circulate to commissioners afterwards. It's lengthy, but I would encourage you to read a couple of the sections of that report and at least the question and answer sheets. But their report gave some interesting findings, and I've just pulled some of them. Many species and ecosystems are currently near or beyond their hard adaptation limits. And people that rely on them to survive are currently near or beyond their soft adaptation limits. And adaptation is something that Jessica is going to talk about quite a bit. The next one is the effectiveness of available adaptation options decreases with every increment of warming. And that to be successful, adaptation requires urgent, more ambitious, and more accelerated action, along with rapid and deep cuts in greenhouse gas emissions. Furthermore, The earlier adaptation measures are implemented, the more everyone will benefit, because the potential to reduce climate risk through adaptation is higher until mid-century and for global warming levels hit below 1.5 degrees Celsius. If one invests in adaptation now, it will avoid higher investments in the future, because the potential benefits of adaptation activities outweigh their costs in the long term. More concerning with climate change is that poverty and inequality both present significant adaptation limits or present significant adaptation limits, resulting in unavoidable impacts for vulnerable groups. And that gets to the heart of the work that we're also doing on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Fundamental changes in society are also needed at the same time as conserving, restoring, and safeguarding nature in order to meet the Paris Agreement, and that minor, marginal, reactive, or incremental changes won't be sufficient. And finally, from the study, it indicated that the world generally is currently underprepared for the coming climate change impacts, particularly beyond a 1.5 degrees Celsius global warming. So in effect, from all of the work that's going on at a very large strategic macro scale at the moment, it's expressing concern about the adequacy, the pace at which people are making changes, and in addition to making changes and sort of decarbonizing, adapting our natural resource areas, the importance of how do we bring the community along with us, because the biggest threat to climate change and climate inaction is inaction by ourselves as individuals. So it's a very complex subject matter. It's got a lot of viewing by very important groups around the world at the moment, and that highlights and shines the light on the work that we're doing in the Gorge to look after the gorgeous resources for future generations to come. Having said all that, what I'd like to now do is to turn it over to Christina and the staff. I'm also cognizant of the enormous number of written submissions that we have received from the public and that have been circulated to commissioners, and we will take all of those into the public record automatically, so that it gives the public the opportunity today to add to those current levels of comments that have been provided by other members of the community. So with that, I'll hand it over to Christina.
Thank you, Chair Grimwade. And we do thank the public for providing as many comments as you did. We're still receiving more and more comments each hour. So we're happy that the public is so engaged in this topic. And I wanted to thank Jessica and Lisa for their leadership on preparing the draft that will eventually go out for a full 60-day public comment period. So Jessica, do you want to start off and lead us through the Climate Change Action Plan first draft?
Yes, thank you. Can you all see the screen? Is it showing the right view? Okay, great. Yes. Thank you, Christina. Thank you, Chair Grimwade. We're really pleased to have this opportunity to have a work session with the commission today to go over the early feedback that we have already received from some of you in writing and to help staff make some key changes before, as Christina mentioned, we're able to release the draft for public comment. Thank you, Chair Grimwade, for setting the stage on the urgency of the matter. We just wanted to add a few points on that. We understand the urgency of the magnitude of the topic here is becoming clearer and clearer day by day. In addition to, and actually one of the resources that Chair Grimwade mentioned is a report released just last week from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, finding that 2021 was one of the deadliest, most extreme seasons or years for extreme weather and climate disasters, with over 680 fatalities and 20 separate disaster damages in excess of $145 billion. of cost to people in the US alone. And so the Commission and the Forest Service share a vision for a climate resilient future in the scenic area. This action plan is a really important step towards operationalizing that vision in everything that we do and the ways that we know we have a role in a resilient national scenic area. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm not showing. Apologies. This is the graphic that goes with that. Next slide. This looks like it's showing now. So we want to start off touching on one of the foundations of the action plan, of course, is the revised management plan for the National Scenic Area with the climate change chapter that was added, pointing out that both the Commission and the Forest Service are committed to this effort, with the Commission leading the development of the action plan and both agencies supporting long-term monitoring in the scenic area. I just want to pause and ask Casey if there's anything you want to touch on in terms of the Forest Service role in this action planning effort.
No, thanks, though, Jessica. I just appreciate that. And, you know, this is something that we've been working on together, and you know, the staff at the Forest Service has been providing technical expertise and support to the Commission, you know, through these efforts. And in addition to this, the Climate Change Action Plan, the Forest Service is also undertaking you know, suites of other projects, including our climate change vulnerability analysis and, you know, all these other tools and things to help address the climate change that we're seeing here. And so this is one thing that we're doing, is supporting the Commission through this, and as well as a whole host of other things. So thanks, Jessica.
Thank you, Casey. I'll try to get this to advance the slide. So this graphic just summarizes the process of action planning. We're here in this yellow area towards the end of the planning phase, hoping soon to complete the action plan and within it, the priorities for action. As we move into implementing that green act phase of this diagram, we'll be implementing the priority actions identified in the plan, also improving how we implement the existing plan policies, creating assessments and analyses to support decision-making, and building strategic partnerships to have more impact on the ground. And then we expect that approximately by 2025, we'll be able to take stock of learning through VSI and the progress measures that are outlined in the action plan and our diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts to make some key updates to the management plan and its policies, and also to revise this action plan as needed. Today, I'm just going to spend a few moments on orienting to the action plan itself, touch on some of the key points that we heard from commissioners. We distributed an early draft of the action plan to you, commissioners, for your input, and we really appreciate it. We heard from most of you in written comments, so we're not going to summarize all of that. You have the staff report to be done and the actual comments to view, but we want to just touch on some high-level points. We will outline our anticipated next steps for getting through the finish line with this action plan, and then open it up for some targeted questions that we have in discussion from you. In terms of the scope of the action plan, we did want to just clarify geographically, we're talking about the entire National Scenic Area, but with a focus on the role of the Commission and our role as a land use authority. We're taking on both adaptation and mitigation, which is fairly unique and ambitious. And there are also a lot of areas of overlap between those two topics of adaptation and mitigation. One example is when we're talking about intact habitats and lands such as grasslands and oak woodlands, those also function as carbon storage opportunities. Next. Here's a quick outline of the plan, and you all have seen it, so I'll make this brief, but part one really helps us reach our adaptation priorities. We recognize that climate change touches everything that we do, all of the aspects of our work to protect resources as in accordance with our mandate in the National Scenic Area. So part one really helps us navigate that and find those key points of opportunity for resilience. Part two helps us to reach our mitigation priorities by identifying the opportunities we have to influence greenhouse gas emissions and sinks. And then part three really brings those two together and lines out the eight priority areas for action. And then each of those priority areas have associated with them 1 to 3 strategies and a couple of actions to implement those strategies. And that's part three. Part four explains how VSI and other metrics are going to allow us to track our progress. Commissioner Morgan brought up a great point earlier asking about how will we know that we can check the box on some of these actions. It's a couple of things. We have the actual discrete actions themselves, and then for kind of longer ongoing efforts, we have a few metrics built into the action plan. So on that topic of fire risk that we talked about earlier, we have outlined in the plan to track a number of fire adapted communities in the gorge, so those smaller locations within the National Scenic Area, and also the acres of fuels reduction tracked, accomplished on forest system lands. So we have a couple different ways of tracking how we're doing for those longer term goals that we have. The rest of the presentation, we're really gonna focus on this part three. That's where we're actively working to incorporate some of the commissioner's feedback, where staff is gonna be making the most changes as we get this draft ready for public release. So just to recap what's in that part three, we break down the actions into four different categories written here. This is really the heart of the plan. And some of you made that comment in your written comments to staff, that this is the body of work that we're taking on. This is those actions in detail. We heard from some of you in your comments that it wasn't quite clear in the last iteration of the plan how this body of work is really going to lead to the impacts that we want to see, especially recognizing the urgency to take really meaningful action. So we're working to make this a stronger point, to make this more clear. And we will be encouraging you, commissioners, to revisit, especially this part three during the public comment period, to make sure that we're communicating that well and that we're showing that impact. Actions in the plan that relate to this first line of management plan policy updates, they'll read something like develop policies for wetland enhancement or something else, consider policies related to another priority topic. And really what that means, the way that we envision this playing out, is that over the course of the next year, we're going to be working on each of those to bring you a couple of policy options. So staff can create a staff report and hold a work session as needed to support the commission in making a decision about what policy action it wants to take on those items that we've put into the action plan. And we want to allow that space and time because we know that for each one, there might be a public outreach component to making any policy updates to the plan, and we want to provide that space. The current draft has about 20 different policy updates, so that if we fully implement the list of actions, we're talking about updating the plan in about 20 different locations. So that's a really robust workload that we're talking about. I want to give an example of one of these policy implications that's in the plan. So this is an example for wetlands. And we know wetlands are already a protected resource in the management plan. We also know in terms of climate change, they're very sensitive to hydrological changes and drought. And we know that they're really valuable in climate adaptation for their flood attenuation services, water quality filtration. They're significant for wildlife and plants that the treaty tribes hold with significance. And we know that a lot of rare plants that are under climate change stress that Department of Natural Resources in Washington is tracking are those that are associated with wetlands. So in taking on wetlands, it's a really comprehensive look at natural, cultural, and economic and rare plant issues. So for wetlands, we've added this adaptation outcome. What do we really want to see when we talk about resilient wetlands in the scenic area? We want wetland quality, extent, and function to improve over time. And one of a couple of strategies in the plan to do this is to incentivize and reduce barriers to wetland enhancement and restoration. We've been hearing this from a number of partners that when it comes to those big projects that can really make a difference, reconnecting floodplains, restoring wetlands in a meaningful way, the management plan in a couple different ways is creating some barriers that we don't intend for it to create. And so we really feel that it's important to address those policy issues and try to create some sort of option, whether it's a permit, streamlined, expedited review, or some other mechanism in the plan to allow for wetland enhancement to happen more easily and on a grander scale. So that's what we need to see.
Hey, Jessica, did you have a slide for that wetland example? I wasn't sure if you advanced it.
Sorry, I'm having trouble here with the view. Apologies.
It seems to be working. It's just a little delayed, but we're on the part three strategies and actions.
I see here, that. Okay, thank you, Lisa.
Maybe just a quick glance at this just to give them a visual. Thank you.
Thank you. I have two screens operating and for whatever reason, very clunky. So here's what's in the plan. Thank you, Lisa. So we have these adaptation outcomes, the strategies, and the priorities for action. There we go. I see that advanced. So we're going to summarize here just for you. When we're talking about the adaptation priorities in the plan, as a reminder, these are those four priorities that we have: cold water habitats and streams, wetlands, culturally important plants as one of the top priorities that we heard from from treaty tribe members who have been participating in our review committee, that culturally important plants are an important treaty right topic to be addressing through climate change, and oak winter range. So we just wanted to show how the plan is potentially going to update policies related to these priorities, because and we heard that it wasn't quite clear yet. And so this is sort of the set of actions related to policy change when it comes to our adaptation. So we have actions related to supporting stream and wetland enhancement, as I shared in that example, and also addressing stream buffers and wetland buffers to enhance adaptation for those resources. In terms of culturally important plants, we're really leaning on collaboration and consultation with the treaty tribes to help guide us in what's appropriate there. But we have several ideas that we've been vetting with tribal agency folks about how to do that and to really uphold the development review consultation process to make sure that culturally important plants are included. And then in terms of oaks and winter range, we know that those are among the most climate resilient areas in the gorge. And so we're really interested in protecting those from the threats of conversion to development that we're seeing. In terms of mitigation, these are those four key priorities that we currently have. And this is going to be the topic of our discussion towards the end of the presentation in just a few more slides. So we also have outcomes and strategies and actions for these. And here are some of those policy implications in the current list of actions. In terms of transportation, revisiting our recreation intensity classes and furthering what we started with Gorge 2020 to really support transit and electric vehicle infrastructure and multimodal connections to communities through our recreation sites. We want to clarify something that is in the last draft, and we had a couple commissioners ask about this. We're trying to clarify some of the connections that we see between housing and transportation. We mentioned that we know the commission is interested in working on accessory dwelling unit policies for other purposes. It's something we began in Gorge 2020. And we just want to ensure that climate change and transportation commute times and vehicle miles traveled are a consideration when we're talking about any housing related policy. So we're going to clean up that language and make that a little bit more clear in the next version. And then in terms of our sort of land-based mitigation strategies, the updated management plan also has a policy to require full mitigation for forest conversion. And that's a lofty goal, and it's not quite specific enough. So we're going to work on policy language to implement that through guidelines in the management plan. What does it really mean to require full mitigation? And then similar to the wetland and stream enhancement policies, we want to encourage appropriate forest enhancement to reduce, fire risk. Next slide. This is a graphic that appears in the plan. I won't spend too much time on it now, but it's available to us if we want to revisit it later in the discussion. This just shows how the criteria that the commission approved were applied to the priorities. And you can see that for most of them, we're hitting either all the criteria or many criteria for prioritization. Right. So we offered to summarize just a couple of the key takeaways for staff when we looked at your commissioner input on the early draft. And again, thank you for those who provided comments. We really appreciate your insights. So the first point that came clear to us is that we really need to show the impact that the action plan will make. And we touched on some of those points. We're still working on that piece. So anything additional that commissioners want to offer to suggest, we're open to hearing that, of course. And then the second point that we heard was really to focus our role a little bit further around mitigation. We had some questions about what are the most appropriate roles for us and where is our influence at the commission in terms of mitigation. So we know that transportation is one of the largest greenhouse gas sources, but how much can we really affect those emissions is one of the questions raised. Should we focus on the nexus between transportation and recreation, for example, or focus more on carbon storage in lands, which, you know, may be a lesser overall contribution to greenhouse gases, but our impact there can be significant. So we'd like to know if the commission supports narrowing the amount of work we do in these mitigation areas to focus either more on adaptation than mitigation or on any one of our mitigation priorities. So we'll come back to this in just one more slide for the discussion. In terms of next steps, we did want to fill you in on our current thinking about how we'll step through the rest of this action planning process. Here we are in March, and end of March or early April, we plan to release a draft for public comment. And again, we'll have a 60-day review period and welcome additional public comment at that time. We'll be hosting open houses to answer any questions that folks have. And we'll do some really targeted outreach with the treaty tribes and the counties in the gorge to ensure that they have an opportunity to provide us with direct feedback and that we can really step them through those key connections in the action plan. And then we'll host another work session in June that's sort of a placeholder for any additional questions that we want to work through with you. And hopefully in July, we'll be recommending a final for adoption or final edits. So with that, we're to our discussion questions for today. We feel like we have a really good sense for how to move forward with the adaptation priorities. So we're really asking to focus our conversation today around the mitigation priorities. Remember, we don't have an assessment to lean on when it comes to mitigation. Similar to what we have for our adaptation component, we have a full detailed, spatially explicit vulnerability assessment that the Forest Service completed for our geography. We don't have a similar report for the NSA when it comes to emissions. So we've been really working through kind of how to weigh and balance those different potential outcomes of our work in mitigation. And now that you've had the opportunity to read the initial draft, we're really looking forward to your thoughts on, are these the right four places to focus our attention? And do we need to be sort of shifting our focus within them? And we'd like to just offer or suggest for your consideration, Chair, that perhaps we move to commission discussion first and feedback so that we can really get what we need as staff to continue on with the draft and then move to public comment, because of course we will have that 60-day public comment period just around the corner. And with that, that's all I had. So I'll stop sharing screen.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Jessica. Commissioners, I opened it for your comments, questions with staff. Commissioner Nichols?
Yeah, I had a few comments that I shared. They're mostly minor things, but it concerned me because I think we're leaving some things out that should be in there. One thing on the 13th page is for listing animals and plants of concern. I believe we need to add lamprey to that list. I think it's very important culturally that should be there. On the flip side, on page 21 under priority habitats, I'm really not sure why we've included aspen, because aspen is right at the edge of its range in Oregon. It's much more important in the Rocky Mountains and the Blues and the Northern Basin, not so much in the gorge. And I'm also very confused by the matrix as presented on page 23, which uses red for high on one axis and green for high on the other axis, visually confusing. Also, there's an unexplained asymmetry to the matrix, which should have with we have medium versus medium coming out as high. I'm not sure how that works. And finally, I believe that instead of using Celsius, we should use Fahrenheit through all of our measurements. It's not something we're used to in this country, and transparency is a lot easier, and it's hard to calculate the difference in your head. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Nichols. If I could respond quickly, we have made those two sort of quick changes, the Celsius and Fahrenheit, and adding the lamprey. And we're working to clarify your other questions because we understand they're a little bit confusing. We did actually remove the snapshot for Aspen. Another commissioner brought up that point as well. We're really trying to just clarify that in the plan we have, we're showing our work with the full suite of resources that we looked at for vulnerability, and that's over 35 different components of when it comes to rare plants, streams, wetlands, but all the other things that we protect through the management plan and our role. We really whittled that down into the key snapshots where the areas where we really see a nexus with our management plan, our role as a commission, and addressing climate change. And then we whittled that even further into those four adaptation priorities. So we're gonna really work to make that a little bit more clear in the action plan, and your questions are very helpful in doing that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Mills?
Yes, thank you. And thanks staff, particularly Ms. Olson, for the work here. It's impressive, outstanding, and maybe a little overwhelming at the same time. There's so much packed into this. One thing I wanted to make sure that you mentioned and that we have time to address along the way is under housing and transportation in the mitigation priorities as the accessory dwelling units. I know there are differing opinions from the public on that. There's differing statutes between Oregon and Washington. There's different opinions amongst commissioners, but I just want to make sure that we vet that, because I think there's some arguments that accessory dwelling units would actually reduce greenhouse gas emissions by reducing transportation miles driven. And I think even more importantly is the integration of our diversity, equity, inclusive initiative into the climate work. I can't underscore how important I think multi-generational housing is, and affordable housing, and the accessory dwelling units could really be helpful in those areas. And I know Commissioner Kaufman has brought up the ordinance in Skamania County that I think is worth looking at. Commissioner Miller has pointed out the importance it has for multi-generational housing in the Native American communities. So I just want to make sure that we continue to have that on our screen. Thanks.
Commissioner Liberty.
Thank you. I appreciate that we have gotten this far and the thoughtful work that has been done by our staff. I provided several pages of comments, so I'm not going to repeat them here, but I wanted to touch on a few points. One is I'm encouraged to hear that the staff is suggesting that we get a list focused on adaptation mitigation of action steps we can take. It would be helpful from my perspective if we had some rough ranking or quantification of the impact they would have. And I think in this case, we should really encourage the staff to offer a list that's ambitious and entirely within our authority. There will be controversy associated with that. That's natural, that's to be expected, but it's up to us to decide how ambitious we wish to be and how much controversy we're willing to tackle. We're gonna have controversy about this for the rest of our lives. That's the reality. So I really encourage the staff to say, here's the maximum you can do under adaptation mitigation. Let us sort through that. And that ought to be the core of our action plan. Supporting, encouraging, studying, those are all nice, but those aren't really action steps. And personally, I think the time for study has passed long since. Two specific topics. One is our recently amended management plan calls for an analysis of the climate change impacts of urban area boundary adjustments. This is actually not terribly complicated subject now because it's been analyzed in many places, but I would like to see that filled out since the commission voted, as I recall, unanimously to make that a factor for consideration. The second relates to accessory dwelling units, and I differ with my colleagues on this. They are appropriate in urban areas. I think they're totally inappropriate outside urban areas. That's a way of doubling density outside urban areas. And this issue is directly connected to short-term rentals. If ADUs become short-term rentals, they're actually driving up home costs and can reduce housing supply. So if we're concerned about both equity and climate change, by all means, let's talk about ADUs. Let's talk about short-term rentals as well. And I look forward to public comment.
Commissioner Kaufman.
Thank you. And I appreciate all the work that the team is putting into this for all of us. I mean, this really impacts not only our region, but the world around us. ADUs, I want to come back to that. I think we need an in-depth study so that we can find out what works. There are moderate ways to apply that so that we can get that effect for those multi-generational families. There are ways that we could perhaps limit them from being short-term rentals so that it is used for that intent, which is to allow families to stay together as your children grow. And I also wanted to make one comment that you talked about the EV infrastructure. And I do think that it is important for us to follow that path because there is a lot of work right now and a lot of funding right now available across the nation for working towards EV infrastructure. And when we are setting land use policies, that's definitely something that we can investigate of how we can support that type of work, understanding the costs on the flip side, which is if the electricity is coming from hydropower, how does that impact the region? So there may be work that we can do where we are making some more allotments for individuals to have electric panels, other types of things. But I think that is something within our wheelhouse that we can make at least a small impact on. So thanks for the work.
Commissioner Pitt.
Yeah, I really echo a lot of what Ben said, just really a lot of gratitude to our staff on this, but also on the county ordinances and community and other professionals that have been a part of these conversations. I definitely felt a little bit less stressed about climate change once I saw this, and I feel like it's off to a good start. And I think I'll have to follow up with my particular feedback, probably just like the other folks did, but behind the curve. And I do want to mention that I think that, you know, thinking about a plan that looks like, what would we do if we had more support, if we were leveraging our relationships, work rather than totally narrowing down, but we could just speak to the limitation of the section, you know, like, oh, hey, we would love to see this actually have data attached to it. But, you know, just kind of future looking, knowing that this is a lifetime issue. And, you know, as always, I wish that climate change wasn't politicized. But regardless of that, I think, you know, a lot of folks that work close to the earth or, you know, are often kind of in touch with their surroundings are really noticing climate change. And that's one of the reasons why I want to have this kind of being somewhat of an educational tool, but also it is really important. We are really at one of those tipping point type places with mitigation even being able to be effective. And so the adaptation piece is also really important because of where we're at historically, but that's why I think trying to have both pieces there and proactive is really helpful and useful because it's the kind of leadership that's needed to help prevent suffering, to help promote safety. And I would say too, I think a lot of the data collection around human health, I've heard that it's not complete. So even in extreme heat events, people weren't necessarily tracking, okay, like, where were their losses? That data isn't consistent throughout the nation. And so we know that it's a really big impact. We saw that last year. But yeah, I'll plan to follow up. Again, super enthusiastic. And thank you all for your commitment to prioritizing the well-being of the area.
Commissioner Morgan?
Yes, thank you. First, I wanted to compliment staff on the enormous work they put into this. And I know that much of that work requires exploring costs and effects of climate change and the stresses, and identifying the priority habitats and within our the purview of the National Scenic Area. So that, and then the hard job is then winnowing it down and trying to prioritize what we as a commission can do effectively. And I want to reiterate what Commissioner Liberty said about perhaps quantifying some of the, for example, the four focal strategies. What is the relative contribution and effectiveness of focusing on those four strategies? For example, carbon storage is still in its infancy in terms of understanding exactly what it can be stored versus under in different landscapes. And I think our ability to control carbon storage is maybe relatively minor compared to some of the other priorities. For example, the forest risk by far, I think, would overshadow any storage with one catastrophic fire releasing carbon into the atmosphere. And I think, although we may not have seemingly direct control over those fire risks now, I think we should not be hesitant to explore ways in which we can influence it and perhaps directly control it in the future, both in terms of identifying as fire adapted communities or promoting that, and also through the forest practices of thinning, which I think the Forest Service is moving very rapidly forward with now. They've got additional funding for that, but also explore maybe something that's controversial, such as forest closures during red flag alerts, for example. And that means working with our county partners and with and Forest Service to do what is being done as a common practice now for, say, a logging company. During red flag alerts, you know, they shut down operations. And I think for recreation use, we have to understand it can have a similar effect. So I wanna encourage staff to be open to what may not be apparent effect given our authority now, but what we could actually enable through possible additional legislation. Thanks.
Other commissioners? Okay, if there's no other comments from the commissioners, I'd like at this time to open it to the public for comment. As I indicated earlier, anyone that has submitted a written letter, we'll take that into testament. What I would like to think is, given the number of people we have in the audience, that we don't focus on repeating what someone else has commented on. We just sort of say, we endorse what so-and-so has said, and these are some additional points that I'd like to make. So we use our time to the fullest advantage. So with that, Connie, let the hands go up and we start hearing.
Okay, I would like to state that I received 92 more comments overnight and during the commission meeting today from that mass email. There are some individual comments embedded in those as well, but I haven't got those on the website. I will get those on the website. So any members in attendance today, if you would like to comment on the climate action plan, if you could use the raise hand function, I do have a list. First up is Eric Strid, then Peter Cornelison, Megan Ramey. So we'll go with Eric first. Eric?
Good morning, and thank you for your work on this plan. And thank you for listening today. My name is Eric Strid. I live in White Salmon. I serve on the Hood River County Energy Council, but my comments today are my own and not those of the council. I shall address only mitigation portions of this draft. You can't improve something if you don't measure it. 2 years ago, I gave this commission a draft emissions inventory for the National Scenic Area. Insights from that work were clear. First, emissions from the highway vehicles are about 74% of NSA energy emissions and rail traffic another 18%. Thus, any meaningful mitigation must address vehicle emissions. Second, replacing half of the current vehicle fuel usage with electricity for EVs will save over $63 million per year. The average US household spends about $3,000 a year on gasoline, comparable to about $1,000 for EVs. Other co-benefits of the transition include zero toxic emissions, local job creation, much lower maintenance costs, keeping energy spending in the region, increasing energy resilience and grid efficiencies, and more. Thus, any strategies to decarbonize vehicles will also contribute significantly to the economic development of NSA communities. It's in the best interest of every household or jurisdiction to decarbonize because these co-benefits are all local and immediate. The earlier we decarbonize, the more we benefit. That's the opportunity. This draft lacks mitigation goals. It hints at a mitigation goal for 2050, but any 2050 goal just enables procrastination. The IPCC urgently warns that we must cut emissions in half by 2030, implying about 7% reduction per year now. While that sounds impossible, countries are demonstrating this, and the strongest policies are revenue neutral. Thus, goal two should be 50% reduction by 2030. Achieving that mostly depends on vehicle electrification. The arithmetic is simple. EV sales must ramp to 100% share by around 2025, from under 10% today. While that may seem impossible, EV sales doubled last year, demand exceeds supply, and laggard automakers will go out of business if they can't keep up. This commission can't specify vehicle performance, but Washington passed a bill last year that demonstrates that states can simply require new vehicles to be electric. This commission has clout in Olympia and Salem with such an urgent topic. Lastly, such aggressive goals should be pursued as stretch goals, requiring a culture of appropriate risk-taking. We can't afford to waste more time with agencies that propose plans without numbers. Accountability avoidance results from poor performance management processes. Parameters for appropriate risk-taking can be straightforward and very productive. Strong performance management is not rocket science. So I'll provide many more details for in the written comments. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Commissioner Liberty, you have your hand raised. You're muted, Commissioner.
Thank you, Connie. I've spoken with Mr. Stritt on this topic before. I'm wondering if there is anything we could do with regard to decarbonization for those of us, including this house, heated with methane, with natural gas.
Was that a question for Mr. Stritt? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Go ahead, Eric.
Sure. The data around methane has been bad for methane leaks, for the indoor toxic pollution and so forth. For new construction, it's no more costly to provide electric heat pumps for buildings. And if there's any code that the commission can define, that's one of the things that should be defined. Go all electric, and new construction should be EV ready. Huge savings, because in 20 years, all these vehicles will be electric, and you'll wish you had put the conduits in years ago. So all electric is a big theme. Now, the existing houses will be more expensive to remodel. On the other hand, furnaces only last about 20 years. So your next furnace should be a heat pump. Your next vehicle needs to be electric and so forth.
Thank you. Up next is Peter Cornelison, and then Megan Ramey. Peter?
All right. Thank you, Connie. My name is Peter Cornelison, and I'm testifying today on behalf of Columbia Gorge Climate Action Network, or cgcan.org. We are a network of citizens and organizations from throughout the gorge who initially stood up to oppose fossil fuel transport through the gorge and now focus on addressing climate change locally. We have helped a number of gorge cities pass climate resolutions and sponsor Earth Month activities every year in April. First, I want to acknowledge and thank the commission, the Forest Service staff, and the numerous people who developed and contributed to this draft climate action plan. It is an impressive start. We are concerned, however, that the 94-page plan is very hard for the general public to understand. There are simply too many details for people to wade through. What people want to know are what climate actions the commission is going to take and when. Unfortunately, they're buried in Part 3 at the end of the plan and not clearly articulated. One idea that has been suggested would be to reverse the order of the plan by placing Part 3 up front and Parts 1 and 2 as later chapters or appendixes. We agree with the commissioner comments that the recommended actions need to be clear and impactful. To build public support for the plan, it has to be understood, maybe even at a fourth grade level. I took a look at the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, the regional government for Lake Tahoe, to see how they were dealing with climate change and how they were presenting their plans to the public. The agency is a bi-state compact of California and Nevada created by Congress, much like the Gorge Commission. 40,000 people live there year round and 15 million people visit every year versus our, 3 million. The agency breaks their plan into four distinct parts: vulnerability, adaptation primer, adaptation actions, and resiliency actions. They also have a story map that makes the effects of climate change very visible to the public. We suggest the commission follow the example of Lake Tahoe and make their plan more public facing. We also urge the commission to set targets for greenhouse gas emissions for the gorge and include the emission reduction pledges of cities that have already passed climate resolutions: Hood River, White Salmon, Bingen, and Mosier. As a regional government, the commission can exert leadership and coordination here. The commission can also take a more active role in helping to spread climate resiliency information to local governments and residents. We're glad to see information about Fire Adapted Washington presented today. Fire Adapted Oregon is another site that shows impressive work in this area. Thanks for listening to these suggestions.
Thank you.
Yes, Lisa?
I was wondering if I may ask a quick question of Mr. Cornelison, because I know that you are involved in the resolutions that were passed by other communities, which you mentioned, Hood River, White Salmon, Mosier, and Bingen. And we were just made aware by one council member this morning that Lyle is looking at a similar commission this evening. And I have not been able to find a copy of that. And I just wondered if you might know or be able to point me in the right direction.
I have a draft copy of what is going to be presented tonight, and I can send that to you, Lisa.
Okay, and thank you. And just for commissioners' awareness too, that we have provided letters of support for those other community efforts in the past and are reaching out to see if that would be helpful for this Lyle meeting as well. Thank you.
So next up, thank you, Peter. Next up is Megan Ramey and then Michael Lang. Megan?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great, thank you, Gorge Commission, for this important plan and for hearing my testimony. It's nice to see some friendly faces. My name is Megan Ramey and I'm the Active Transportation Rep for ODOT Region 1 ACT, and passionately volunteer my time for Safe Routes to School as the conductor for the bike train and walking bus to May Street Elementary. And I'm also on the board of Columbia Area Transit, but this testimony is from me personally. My family leads a carless life in Hood River. My husband bikes to work at Tofurky and daughter walks to the middle school every day. I can pretty much walk any place I need to go in town. We get groceries or run errands with our Urban Arrow, which is an electric cargo bucket bike that is a minivan replacement. We take the CAT bus with our bikes to Portland and the Dalles. and live this way for happiness and community connections. And if I'm honest, the environmental benefits are a nice side effect. Last Monday, the UN's IPCC report issued a dire warning of delay means death, and that the effects of climate change will outpace our ability to adapt. We are also living through a gasoline-fueled invasion of Ukraine, experiencing historical gas prices, and should be doing everything we can to decrease our contribution to this war and the dependence and vulnerability caused by auto-centric culture. Though well-intentioned and a very comprehensive plan, I believe the Gorge Commission's Climate Action Plan falls short in expressing the urgency to adapt now, recommending policies and behavior change for adaptation. It's wonderful to see a lot of protection measures, but considering the gorge will be inundated with climate and disaster refugees that will flock to spaces near water, parks, and farms, protection will not matter without a plan to accommodate the refugees. Here are some specific gaps I noticed and tweaks for the plan. Number one is the need for a refugee accommodation plan. Number two, emphasize policies and behavior change around active transportation and transit and discourage driving single occupancy vehicles, gas or electric. Specifically, riding the bus, a bike, wheelchair, or walking should feel like a first class experience, super convenient and safe, and driving should be as inconvenient as possible. Chasing traffic congestion with policies to increase efficiency and parking demand is a black hole, because we know that when you make driving easier, more people drive. Number three, emphasize individual behavior change. IPCC report says that individual actions can reduce carbon emissions by 25%. Number four, EV infrastructure should include e-bikes, their charging infrastructure, and policies to increase adoption, like the $750 cash incentive that the city of Banff just voted to fund. I have two quick additional recommendations. I'm sorry, I'm out of time. Number five is a recommendation to build climate action or climate safe neighborhoods with neighbors connecting and sharing resources during disasters. We know that community building solutions are the most powerful adaptation tools. And number six, solar and wind independence should be on the table. If the Gorge Commission is going to promote EV automobiles, then their energy source should be just as important. Thank you so much. I'm sorry, I'm over time.
Okay, and up next, thank you, Megan. Up next is Michael Lang and then Deborah Farrar. Michael?
Mr. Chair and members of the commission, this is Michael Lang, Conservation Director with Friends of the Columbia Gorge. First, I'd like to applaud the work of the staff and the commission in beginning to address this really critical issue of our time. I've submitted written comments as well. Within those comments too, there's a link to the IPCC's Climate Change 2022 report that I encourage commissioners and staff and anybody that hasn't taken a look at that to please do so. The draft Climate Action Plan is a really good start. There's a lot of excellent information. I agree with some of the other comments so far that it's light on action. The real focus is part three of the Climate Action Plan. Friends would hope that the commission really bolsters that with more specific actions to build climate resiliency and also mitigate for the impacts of climate change. Studies, data gathering, mapping, et cetera, are very important, but they should be tied directly to policy recommendations to address climate change. And I'm thankful for the visual for the slide that Jessica Olson showed demonstrating that as well. Also, we strongly encourage the commission to exclude any what the term is climate maladaptation measures from the plan, such as more rural residential development. ADUs outside of urban areas will have a negative impact on climate, and they really have no place in this plan. We're very concerned that ADUs aren't even an allowed use in many of the urban areas in the gorge. That's where ADUs belong. It would kind of flip the purposes of the act. We're concerned that it would be inconsistent with the act and actually contribute to adverse impacts from climate change. I'll just highlight a couple of the other points in the comments in the remaining time that I have too. protect priority habitat by identifying and designating these areas as open space so that most development will not be allowed there. That's how we can really protect climate resiliency and protect those priority habitat areas. Also, regarding forest practices, Commissioner Morgan, I like his suggestions on that, looking at ways that we can build climate resilience, particularly in our general management area forest lands that are regulated under state law, not under the National Scenic Area Act. Also agree with Commissioner Morgan's comments regarding forest fires and closing public lands during red flag warnings as well. And then looking at treaty rights too, and the impacts of climate change too, recognizing that the Columbia Basin tribes have treaty rights to hunt, gather, and fish in their usual and accustomed places. We really encourage working with tribal partners to adopt new policies to protect these treaty rights. And we're very encouraged by the outreach that is planned to tribal nations do in the Columbia Basin to look at increasing protection of those treaty rights. And then also prohibit the expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure. And this is just touching on a comment by Commissioner Liberty to Mr. Strid too, that there are things that the commission can do in their jurisdiction to prohibit the expansion of transmission and also distribution of natural gas or methane gas, which it is mostly comprised of too. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Next up is Deborah Farrar and then Janet Wainwright. Deborah?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great, thanks. So I'm Debbie Ferrer and I live in the Dalles. And I would like to commend the commission for taking the critical step of including climate action in your Gorge 2020 management plan. So thank you very much for taking a leadership role in our Gorge community with that. With respect to the draft climate action plan that came out last week, in general, I find it to be somewhat intimidating at 90 plus pages. And I have, you know, been interested in climate change for many years as a high school science teacher for 32 years. You know, normally things like that wouldn't intimidate me. So I'm kind of thinking about other people who don't have the kind of background that I have and, you know, wanting to find out more about your climate action plan. A 90 plus page document might be just a little intimidating for many. And the first two chapters are mostly a review of what folks have who have been paying attention to climate change probably already know. And I understand it's important to include that information for people who haven't been paying as much attention, but perhaps a better place for that information, or at least most of it, is in some kind of an appendix. If I want to read about your action plan, I'd like to get to the action before page 44. We're all busy and I'm probably a little impatient, so I'd like to get to the meat of it a little sooner. And then when I do get to the action, I'd like to see more specific targets and timelines. The goals, the priority actions, and the strategies are great and very clear, and I like that. But what seems to be missing are timelines and how the success of this effort will be measured. So again, as a science teacher for so many years, the idea of SMART goals is just part of my natural way of thinking. And I think probably most of you know that SMART goals are specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. And I think you have some good, specific, sensible goals. They are achievable and attainable, and they're relevant. But what's lacking is the measurable and time-bound part of it. And then finally, in the sections that address what local communities are doing, I'd like to mention that the City of the Dalles and Wasco County have recently agreed to form a joint climate action task force, and they'll be holding their first meeting this month. So I hope you'll consider, and I'd be happy to help provide more information on that since I was a part of making that happen. But I would like to see the Dalles included in the local efforts that are happening on this front. Thank you.
Thank you. And next and last is Janet Wainwright. Janet?
Thank you. I have a couple of comments. I love the idea of having my daughter live on my property in Skamania County, but common sense just tells me that an ADU would increase carbon emissions and have a negative impact on the climate. How would the commission enforce how an ADU is used? On my application for my ADU, I might say, this is for my daughter, and then rent that ADU and make a nice chunk of change renting to someone else. I'm against ADUs in the rural areas. And then on another topic, as many of you know, as a commissioner, FireWise was very important to me, and I am still concerned about the lack of concrete mandates for landowners to adhere to FireWise protocols. Most fires are human caused, and I think it should be more forceful regarding adhering to those FireWise protocols. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't have anyone else. Oh, I do have one. One more just popped up. Eileen Levy. Eileen?
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Eileen Levy. For the record, I'm a ranch and farmland owner in Klickitat and in Clark counties. And I just want to say that Janet Wainwright has been reading my mail. We must simply must be more, to use a word that's going to put people's teeth on edge, prohibitive to expanding individual, or for lack of a better term, accessible buildings for purposes other than the main property owner. And I think that the exactly what Janet has said is that we have too many people selling property. And as someone who owns a fair size of Klickitat County, I would suggest that it's an easy access to income, particularly as our drier lands in the eastern part of the county get drier with the advent of climate change, water diminishing, water accessibility diminishing. We just need to be more cognizant of the fact that people have an incapacity in some instances to supervise their own behaviors because they see an opportunity to make some financial gain, which is perfectly understandable. It's a part of the human animal. But I would say that if we're going to be developing our currently constituted forest or agricultural lands, building materials must be energy generative, and to the degree to which the Gorge Commission and the Scenic Area Act can advertise and utilize that process, it would be in the best interest of the gorge certainly, and for all inhabitants up and down the gorge, because in my opinion, our weather, our climate, it's only going to be more degenerative as we have more people, as we have more automobiles. And I'm all for the electric automobiles too, and rapid or accessory transit options for people. And I think I've said enough. Anyway, thank you, Janet. You really hit it out of the park as far as I'm concerned this morning. Thank you.
All right, I believe that was the last person on my list. I don't see any others. Chair?
Thank you. Commissioners, are there any questions or further discussion as a result of the public comments?
Commissioner Nichols?
Yeah, I'd just like to respond to some of the concepts. I hear what I would call mission creep being advocated on us. We are a land use agency. We cannot control emissions. We cannot control pollution in the river. We can make land use decisions. And implying that we need to set a goal of emissions for any specific date, we don't have that control. That's not in our wheelhouse. What we do need are very specific ideas of things we can do and should do. Thanks.
Commissioner Liberty?
Well, we do have emissions creep, and even within our mission, I think we can set, quantify what we think are most effective actions. And we do have a lot of authority with regard to land development in the within the gorge outside the urban areas. And we also have some indirect authority within the urban areas, at least to the extent that they're asking for urban area boundary expansion. So one theme I heard was focus on the action steps, quantify, give us some options in terms of most effective to least effective. I'm interested in Commissioner Morgan's comments about carbon storage. And I think that's going to affect my thinking if we learn more about how much we can do. Finally, again, Commissioner Morgan, and we've heard from testimony from various people, one preventable forest fire in the gorge will have gigantic impact in terms of both gases and aerosols that affect the climate. And this, I have been concerned for some time that there's an automatic closure requirement for red flag days. I just still do not understand why that isn't something that should be a high priority to organize.
Other commissioners?
Commissioner Weisfeld?
Yeah, thank you so much. I'll just concur with the comments on urging action and prioritizing how the plan is laid out for readability and understanding by not just all of us, but the public as well. I think that's super important. And just to say thank you to everybody who's already put so much work and effort into this. It's a super exciting part of why I wanted to be a member of this commission, and I'm really excited to see us take it forward. So thank you.
Okay, so just a few comments. First of all, in terms of the plan, I think it's important for everyone to keep in mind the plan is a framework for what is going to be a journey for many, many years. This is not going to be a plan where you open the cover and within 3 years you can tick every box in that. This is going to be a plan that is constantly going to be evolving and moving in different directions as new science and learnings comes into being. Having said that, it is absolutely vital that the plan be measurable, be achievable, and that there be clear targets and timeframes given. Credibility is going to be of the utmost, and what we're seeing already with a lot of organizations is they've developed their climate action plans. And like organizational strategic plans, they go up on the shelf and the dust gets there and everyone sort of blows it off once a year and that's it. For us to be successful, we are going to have to be working across multiple jurisdictions. We cannot work in isolation because otherwise our policies won't necessarily have the desired impacts and effects that we're wanting. We've got to be dealing with this in a day-to-day mindset. So it's not just a once-a-year effort for the Commission or any other organisation. We have to embed climate change into the day-to-day decision-making that we do with our organisations. And it doesn't matter whether you're in natural resources, retail, finance, whatever, day-to-day embedding of climate change is going to be of utmost significance. The other thing I totally agree is that this plan is written for a very limited audience at this point in time. Commissioner Pitt and I have met with staff. We've had a conversation around that very topic about the needing for a very concise, compelling communique in a sort of executive summary form that really gets the message across to the layperson who is the person that we have to reach with climate change. So I'm confident that staff will take the challenge on to give us a compelling, riveting story, which for all intents and purposes, you get a journalistic award. The most important thing for me is to ensure that the Commission has the capabilities within the organisation and making sure it is equipped with the necessary tools, the necessary skills and expertise to deal with this is of the utmost importance and is something that we need to look at seriously as we go through our budget process to make sure that we are equipped with those resources. It doesn't necessarily translate we need extra bodies on the ground. It could be that it's how we equip our staff today to be more and more efficient. The other thing is climate change is not about one choice, one decision. We are going to be making hundreds and hundreds of decisions in the years ahead to deal with this issue. I encourage everyone to be agile, keep an open mind. Things that we have typically brushed aside as not being appropriate may, for some greater cause in terms of decarbonisation, be an appropriate strategy that we need to look for. And finally, I would encourage staff to bring forward to commissioners an accelerated program of policy so that we can get our policies in play sooner than later. If we take a long time to move, we are going to find it more challenging, more difficult, more costly to do it. So we need to get out of the gate, ahead of the curve, and come home and bring this issue right to the very forefront of the work in the few years ahead of us. So having said that, that's all I've got. I hand it back to our director for a few comments. Have I lost our director?
No, I'm here.
I didn't see you.
Yes, thank you, Chair Grimwood, and thank you to all the staff and to the Forest Service for all the input that we've received over the last year as we've tried to craft the Climate Change Action Plan draft. For next steps, it's just a very exciting time for us, taking in the commissioner comments and also all the public comment that we received. We feel like we're on the right track. We do need to think about how we are going to roll this out for public comment. So we're going to reconvene at the staff level with the Forest Service on Thursday, I believe, and start thinking about how we do that. At this point, I'm not sure exactly how long it's going to take to perhaps reorganize the plan a bit, but we still are targeting early April to release a draft for the public review. And as you said, Chair Grimway, this is a work in progress. We will do what we can within the time that we've got and the resources that we have. But I think one of the things that'll be really important as we look forward is what are the resources that we need in order to do the implementation once we have the next version of the plan? You know, what how do we partner better with the counties? How do we partner with other entities and especially institutions and universities that have additional expertise that we need as we move forward? So we will be talking about the budget next month for the next biennium. We'll be putting our heads together and think about, well, what do we need in order to actually do some implementation as quickly as possible? We all feel the urgency. We also feel that there are a lot of things that we can do at the Commission and at the Forest Service, but there are other things that we can also support that may not be necessarily within our purview as a land use agency, but you know, this is going to require all hands on deck. And so we are really looking forward to additional public comment and additional commissioner input. So if you haven't had a chance to provide your comments to us, there's certainly the next couple of months for you to help us with that. So again, I want to really say thanks to the Forest Service for your support as we've navigated through this at the staff level and for all the public comments we've already received. And I'm sure that we will be receiving a lot more during the public comment period. We will do a press release as soon as we have the dates set for those question and answer open houses and make sure that people know when we're going to do those. We are planning to do one during the day and one during the evenings to try to attract as many people as possible to those Q&A sessions, and we'll probably do one each month, so during the 60-day period. So with that, thank you again for all of your input and to all of the partners that are listening out there. And we're going to send you the next draft when it's available for public comment. Thank you to everyone who's helped us with this so far.
Thank you, Christina. And thanks once again to members of the public and to the staff that have been involved in this item. Moving on in the agenda, other business. Do we have any other business from commissioners? If there is no other business, then I move to adjourn the meeting and thank everyone for their attendance today.
Thank you.
This is part two. It's not really business, but I know there's a couple Celilo Falls related events happening, I think tomorrow and the next day. So you might have to Google to see, but I know one of those events is online. So I just wanted to mention that. But really moved by everything today. And again, thank you all.
Thank you, Patu. Okay, goodbye, everyone.